All right, thank you all for returning. First, do I have a motion to exit executive session?
Good move. You don't really need that.
No.
Okay. You ended the executive session.
All right.
Earlier, so we're good.
Okay, very good. If you want a new question, follow.
I apologize to both of you committees, but one of the things that we have an agreement, I think, on both of you, is that the commission has to follow the civil service rules. And I am puzzled by some of the things in the definitions that neither one of you have addressed. And that is so what I want us to go over now. And I apologize to you for the lengthiness of it, but I think after Mr. Stevenson reads them to us, you will understand why I'm asking. So would you go through the definitions? And there are two sections, as you know, I can tell from your citations. There's the code and there's the merit rules and regulations. So this is a little bit repetitive, but it is not, I don't think it's inconsistent, although that's up to you. You can tell me if I've got anything inconsistent. So shall we start with the code and then go back to the rules? And as far as I'm concerned, we can then work with the rules.
This is from Chapter 10 of the Civil Service in the City Code, Section 10-3, definitions. First one is appointment, means the action of an appointing officer, which appoints a person as an employee in the classified service. The next one is for employee. Employee means any person, including officer, lawfully appointed to a position in the classified service and receiving compensation for the class of positions to which such appointment is made. Probationary period means a working test period considered an integral part of the examination process during which a new appointee is required to demonstrate fitness for the position to which appointed by actual performance of the duties of the position. Commissioner Wilk, did you also want probationary appointment from the code?
Probationary, yeah, it's going to be the same in both, I believe.
Okay. Probationary appointment means an original or promotional appointment to a permanent position in the classified service to fill a vacancy therein, other than one caused by the regular incumbent thereof being on leave for a period of not more than 12 months of an eligible who must serve a probationary period previous to acquiring the status of a permanent employee. That's the end of the definitions from the code that I will read. Now I will go to the civil service. Rule 1, Section 3 definitions. Appointment means the action of an appointing officer which appoints a person as an employee in the classified service. Employee means any person, including an officer, lawfully appointed to a position in the classified service and receiving compensation for the class of positions to which such an appointment is made. Initial probationary period means a working test or evaluation period considered an integral part of the examination process during which a new appointee is required to demonstrate fitness for the position to which appointed by actual performance of the duties of the position. The employee is required to demonstrate proficiency in the job and whether he or she will be able to handle the duties and challenges associated with the new job. The initial probationary period is intended to provide the employer time to evaluate employees before making the employee permanent. Probationary appointment means the original or probationary appointment of an eligible to a permanent position in the classified service to fill a vacancy other than one caused by the regular incumbent being on leave for a period of not more than 12 months. The probationary period must be served prior to acquiring the status of a permanent employee.
B, I come out that the probationary period starts on the day that the new appointee starts work. That's where I come out of it with these definitions. Would either of you want to address that?
Ms. Chase, please go first.
All right. Thank you, Chair. I mean, thank you for your question. I think if I'm understanding, you're saying, I think that's consistent with what we're saying, unless I'm missing something, but the effective date of the position is the date you start work, you get paid, you move through the orientation system with the city and all that. And that's what I think is at issue, is it's a, you know, math calculation of what's the date of hire and actual start date to get paid, and what's the last day of work. And so that's the calculation. But am I not answering what, is there more to it you would like me to address?
There's nothing tricky here.
I'm sorry. Thank you. Okay, thank you. So thank you.
I disagree. It doesn't say that. It's not implied there. And none of the rules at work in coordination, it could say that. It doesn't say that. And there's been no interpretation by any court that makes it say that. And I think if we're going to follow the civil service rules, we can't add things and read things into it because we think it's implied. It's not implied. It doesn't read that way. I think that's what people want it to mean because that's easier and that's the shortcut intellectually for us to get there. But the rules do not say that date of appointment equals start date, which it simply could, but it doesn't. And so there is this gap, and the city hasn't defined it. And so we either have to let court do that, come to some conclusion, but I don't think it's synonymous as well, because I don't think the people who drafted it could not have simply have said that as well, if that's what they wanted it to mean. Not everyone starts work on the day that they're appointed as well. And then if it is the day that you start work, then you have a question as to why official city form, the performance evaluation, has a date other than that. That is not a Scrivener's error because there's no declaration declaring that to be so. So there's a gap. How the county fills that gap, I did an analysis. I believe my analysis works best because I don't try to imply something, not because it benefits me, but because that's what the rules say. And if you stick with what the rules say, then I think you can't say date of appointment is synonymous with start. That's just my interpretation. And, of course, we're going to vary because how you make that decision determines the outcome, at least for the commissions here.
Thank you. Thank you.
Nothing more?
No, I don't think so.
Becky? As you're thinking, let me ask my question.
Okay.
Can we put it all to the binder sent by the city? And we want to look specifically at number 4, offer letter from City of Tucson. Have you both found that?
Yes, thank you, Chair.
I'm going to ask you for Ms. Pace. How you interpret this, and Scotland said, then I'm going to ask you the same question, how you interpret this offer letter. Ms. Pace, please go first.
Okay. Thank you, Chair and Commission. Exhibit A4 is the offer letter. It appears dated March 11th, 2025, by the City of Tucson Human Resources to Ms. Calhoun Zenzen, and was an offer of employment. So offers of employment are used by a lot of organizations. It doesn't mean that's their actual start date. Date of hire is when you start getting paid and you do your onboarding and are actually working at the organization. This one says effective anticipated start date is April 7th, 2025. So that would be, I would assume, anticipated at that time. It's pretty normal that something is put in for an employee so they know when they're supposed to start if they can. But usually from a date of hire standpoint, from the employment side and HR side, they're going to look at when did they actually start work and clock in, and where were they given authority to clock in, and then when did they get paid. So that would be your date of hire. So anticipated start date can actually be later, because a lot of times people have to leave their jobs or change. But the goal, it looks to me at the time, is April 7th, and that's the date of hire if they started work that day. Is that? So those are offer letters. They're just offer letters. They give some parameters to the employee. They usually tell them about, you're going to get some employee benefits, and here's how that works, and here's the codes, and here's, you know, the process to start out if you come with us. They don't necessarily mean the person comes with you yet, but hopefully the goal is whoever's hiring. If so, they write the letter, they want it.
So this letter is stating no sooner than April 7th.
Correct.
2025.
That is correct, Chair. This letter is that it would be April 7th, 2025. It could be later. But that was the plan, which is consistent with organizations. They have to plan people to deal with the hire a person and the HR and the payroll and all those things. They try to put a date in.
It would be no sooner than 4/7/2025. It could be later because of circumstances to get that employee ready to start.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you, ma'am.
And that would be, you know, if I have one more point, Chair, is and if it's later, it's going to be reflected in the HR and payroll records because that's when they start paying. That's always the key, is the pay. So, correct.
Okay. Thank you, ma'am. Ms. Calhoun, Zenda?
I'm confused about where the city is coming up with all of these things. There's no evidence that what the city is saying is actually accurate or their procedure. And if it was their procedure, I don't understand why they couldn't simply provide it than throwing out something here today. But even if this was the anticipated start date, then it doesn't explain why the city would have me doing work from my home in Chandler way before I arrived here, which the city itself said was improper. Now, I don't know what was happening at the city during that time, whether I was supposed to be doing work, but I was performing duties for the city of Tucson. I was doing onboarding, watching videos, doing stuff that one would usually do their first day or so at work. So anticipated could mean a lot of things. We don't know. And I believe this actual letter is incorrect because I spoke with, there was a human resources person, and the hourly rate, I asked her to break that down because I was offered a salary that was annual, not hourly. And so there was some confusion about why this was broken down this way as opposed to annual, and does this come out to the amount? Lo and behold, after my employment was terminated, I realized the amount that I had agreed upon with Mr. Rankin is not the amount that I was being paid anyway. So this letter has some inconsistencies in it as well, and I would not presume without doing cross-examination, a history of the city's, a comparator on what it's done for other people. Have other people arrived before earlier and started work? So there's no way to know based on all of the things that the city has done that is inconsistent. And so I see that this is the letter. I will admit that I received it. I can't interpret what Mr. Rankin meant or how the city does what it does when it's doing what it's doing. I just can't.
So I'm going to ask you another question. I may give you an opportunity to respond also. Mr. Stevenson read some definitions to us. One of them was employee. Employee included receiving compensation. Is that correct, Mr. Stevenson?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. So employee receiving compensation. When did you first start receiving compensation? I know you spoke of some preliminary work, some videos, preparation. When did you start receiving compensation as an employee?
I don't know. It probably was the 2 weeks after. But that implies that the city follows its own rules, which today has demonstrated it does not. As well. Now, whether I could file a lawsuit on that one, whether I should have been compensated for doing work for the city. Thank you. Raises a very good question for a claim against the city. And I can argue that I should have been paid because under federal law, I should have been paid for having to watch all of those videos from my home and do all the work that the city required me to do to become an employee. So whether I should have received compensation is one thing. Did I? I did not as well. And so I don't know what the distinction is. I do understand what the definition says. I understand that that's not my situation as well. And I can move forward separately on that particular issue.
Anything more?
Not for me.
Anything more?
I do understand what your definition says. It requires the city to follow its own rules, right, and the law. And so that's a broader question as well. But I agree that that's what's written in the rules. The question is, does the city follow its own rules? And based on what I'm seeing today, it does not.
All right. Thank you, ma'am. Ms. Prince, do you wish to respond?
Yes. Thank you, Chair and Commission. The logical one which employers use is the date of hire is your date of pay. And so that's your first date of employment, which affects a lot of things in an organization. It impacts benefits, insurance, compensation, and all those steps. So that is what is used, and that is what's meant by the definition of compensation, and that is how the city defines it when they're looking at date of hire to date of termination. For the other elements they have to deal with as well as this type of a situation. The definitions is bolster that it's compensation is the date that you use. It would be highly unusual to have every organization have to go out and say, well, did you talk to the person ahead of time before you started work? You don't get paid for that. The federal rules and wage and hour rules don't allow you or don't require you, let me say it that way, don't require organizations to pay for your pre-employment time, such as filling out your paperwork for applying for your position or coming down and doing your I-9 form or things of that nature. It's just not required. It's not your date of hire because you may not make it through that step to be hired, because even though you get an offer letter, for example, if they, and I don't know that they do here, if they require a drug and alcohol test as part of your pre-employment, you get to go down to do that, but you don't get paid for that. But if you pass it, then you may start on the day. And not that that happened here, but that's sort of how it works, the employment. So the employment arena has a lot of things that are pre-employment that you fill out your application. You turn in whatever's needed to even get the offer letter. So that's pretty routine. It's the date that actually counts as your date of compensation and the date you actually start and the day you're onboarded at your department, those kind of things. So I think it's consistent for the city to be using the date of employment as date of pay, which in this case we know the date. And then the last date worked for work is the date of termination. It doesn't matter if an individual starts working past the date they're terminated. We have that in the employment arena all the time. Say, no, you were let go on this date. Don't do any more work. You're not getting paid for that. People may individually choose to do things before and after, but they're not supposed to, and they're not part of their compensation, so they can't really get into that. So it's just date of hire, date of termination. That's what you get paid. That's what your payroll says, and that's where it goes. If that helps context. But if you need more than that, I can look into more than that for you. But I think that is what the city has before it is the start date, the end date, pay date. And that's as an employee, and that's compensation.
All right. Thank you, ma'am. Thank you both. Becky. All right, at this time, I'm going to make a motion to go into executive session once again to seek legal counsel for right now. I make a motion. Do I have a second? All right, all in favor to move into executive session for legal counsel, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. Motion passes 3-0. Thank you. Thank you all.
If you need us to wait about.
The City Fitness Project.
I'm sorry, this is part of the City Fitness Project.
Oh.
You're too picky.
Does anybody want to go first?
No. I have no problems going first.
Okay, and then I'll go second.
I'm not going to go.
You go first, I'll go second.
Becky will do cleanup with everything we need.
I don't mind going first, but you go first, I'll go second. Becky, you finish the song.
May I say something before you finish? Can I say anything?
Let me get us back in session.
Okay.
Then certainly, yes, you may. All right, thank you for returning. Let's continue. Ms. Calhoun Zenzen, did you have a question or statement or comment or concern?
Just thank you. And however it turns out, it's going to turn out, but I just appreciate you taking the time and being thoughtful about it. So that's what I wanted to say.
Oh, you're welcome, ma'am. This is a very important matter. We have all taken it as such. And thank you both for all you've presented to us. Yeah, thank you both. Shall we go ahead and start what we've decided here?
Join Chairman's thanks, everybody, for their patience and the time they put in. And their... so let me start with saying what I think both sides, both parties agree. First of all, I think we all agree that the commission has to follow the civil service rules. And secondly, a second agreement, I think, is that an appellant started work as an employee on April 7th, 2025. That's, in fact, even in appellant's brief here, motion. Her first day of work was 7th, 2025. Appellant received a notification of failure to complete probation on April 3rd, 2026. I think we all agree to that. The notification incorrectly referenced Civil Service Rule 7, Section 3B, rather than 3A, and the applicable period is 12, the applicable probationary period is 12 months. And the issue that I think we have to decide is what is the start date of the probationary period. Because I think we're bound by the rules, I'm going back to the rules and the definition of probationary period that is in the Tucson City Code at Chapter 10, Section 3, and the Tucson Civil Service Commission rules and regulations at 1, Section 3. And I'm going to summarize here. This is probationary period. It's a working test period. It is an integral part of the examination process. A new employee is required to demonstrate fitness for the position by actual performance of the position duties. That being the case, in my mind, the probationary period cannot start before the candidate comes to work. Dates on a later document can't change the probationary period start date. That date has already been determined, and it has to be determined the way the rules say it's determined. It can't, there's nothing in the rules that says a later document can change that date. An incorrect reference to Rule B doesn't change the start date. Again, there's no provision in the merit rules for that. The notification of failure to complete probation meets the requirements of Rule 7, Section 2, which are pretty minimal, and was received on April 3rd, which is before the end of the 12-month period, which would be April 6th, 2026. For those reasons, I think the commission lacks authority to hear the appeal.
Based on the employee not passing probation.
Based on and receiving notification for failure to complete the probationary period before the end of the probationary period.
All right. Thank you, Paula. We've heard a lot. Heard a lot of reasons why this should go both directions. We heard definitions. We've heard dates. Things that stick in my mind. Definition of an employee is receiving compensation. Receiving compensation started on April 7th. There's another offer letter here. It was the city's exhibits number 4. The offer letter, stated in here, anticipated start date of April 7th, 2025. Then we have another document here, number 7, the workday job details. And this is very clear also. This is dated April 14th, 2025. It lists here the hire date, April 7th, 2025. The original hire date, April 7th, 2025. It lists the probation end date, April 6th, 2026. So to me, for all those reasons, I see that this employee did not pass the probationary period. She was notified previous to April 6th, 2026. And for all those reasons, I assert that she was not a permanent employee. Becky?
And I will agree with my colleagues. Because of the conflict of the start date and the conflict in looking at the probation area and the rules for the civil service, we need to ensure that we are following the rules of the civil service and not kind of try to think that something that happened, it happened, but it's not appropriate in working. So yeah, I also agree with my team.
Okay. I need to make a motion here.
Yes, sir.
All right. At this point, I make a motion that we deny that this employee was a permanent employee and is entitled to civil service commission hearing. I make a motion. Do I have a second? All right.
Sir, before the court, if I may interrupt, and would you like to, in your motion, include that the commission therefore does not have jurisdiction to hear the appeal?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for pointing that out. And since this is not a permanent employee, we do not have jurisdiction to hear an appeal of this nature. I'll ask again. I have a motion. Do I have a second? I have a motion and a second. Any questions, comments, concerns before I go to a voice vote? Hearing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, please say nay. Hearing none, motion passes to deny a Civil Service Commission hearing for this employee. I cannot hear you.
I need the transcript. We can talk afterwards.
I need to leave. I have to get back.
You can contact Robert.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
helping with it.
All right. That concludes today. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you both. Very nice meeting both of you.
Thanks for your time. Consideration for everybody.